This is a Heritage Education Commission oral history project from Architecture and Fine Arts. We are here this afternoon to meet with Mrs. Kathy Murphy from Moorhead, Minnesota. Mrs. Murphy is also the present chairperson of the Minnesota State's Arts Board. Kathy, would you like to tell us something about your background and how you became interested in the arts area?
Well, by education and early experience, I've had a strong interest in theater, majored in theater in college and in graduate school, and participated in acting roles, some directing, I guess, at an early age. And that's the kind of interest you tend to follow through your lifetime. So I've always had a strong interest in programs, in the community theater, and in the college theater programs that are available. Have done a little teaching at both Concordia and Moorhead State in the speech departments. So I've tried to stay in touch with speech theater events, and that's been my primary relationship to the arts.
When did you first become introduced to the Minnesota State Arts Board?
Well, I don't have the actual year, but some kind of board was formulated in about 1963, and I was appointed to it by Governor Elmer Anderson at that time, attended one meeting, and then the board was dissolved by a change in administrative government at the state level. A new governor was elected, and that whole board, which was kind of a lame duck affair, had not been confirmed by the Senate, and the whole program was put aside for a year or two, I think, until the National Endowment was created. I think the National Endowment for the Arts was created about in 1965, and at that time, most of the states created state programs or confirmed the programs that had early starts, and I think that's when the Minnesota program came on to a firmer footing and was established as an arts council for the state of Minnesota.
Were you appointed again to that board at that time?
No, I wasn't. But some other people from Moorhead have been very active. Phyllis Thysel was an early member of that arts council, and Walter Prosnitz has been a chairman of that. I think he was a chairman after it became a board. And I don't know what the differentiation was or why the legislature changed the title in the enabling legislation.
When were you appointed to the board?
I think I was appointed originally in 1980 and reappointed in 1984.
And when did you become chairperson of the board?
Must have been in 1983. Mm-hmm. This is my third year serving as chair of the board.
Mm-hmm. What did you do on the board before serving as chairperson?
Well, in the first years of board activity, the board functioned kind of as a whole committee without a strong committee structure. I did serve on the executive committee, and I did serve on an ad hoc committee dealing with regional arts councils and an evaluation and recommendation stemming out of that. It was in those years that the panel system for reviewing grants was initiated, with which you're very familiar, Tim. And so the board ceased to function quite as directly with applications for grants because a system of panel review through peers was introduced.
What is the purpose of the Minnesota State Arts Board?
Well, we have a mission statement. I could read you the first statement because I appointed a committee to reevaluate that mission statement 2 years ago. And this is the most recently formulated statement that our board has approved. And we begin by saying purpose. The Minnesota State Arts Board serves the public through its support of the arts. The board seeks to enhance the quality of life in Minnesota by supporting ongoing creative activity, encouraging new forms of artistic expression, and preserving our artistic heritage. The Arts Board strives to accomplish this purpose through the following goals. And then six more specific goals are listed, dealing with the development of artists and arts organizations, nurturing arts in educational settings, encouraging availability and accessibility of the arts to all citizens, exploring partnerships with public and private sectors in support of the arts, and in general, contributing to the quality of cultural life in Minnesota by being an advocate of the arts. If I had to just point in two directions, I would say I think a strong purpose of the Arts Board is to support excellence in the arts. That's what the arts are all about. Something becomes an art form when it transcends the ordinary. So to try to seek out and support through grants the very best that can be developed and presented is one important arm, but also because we depend on public funds to try to ensure availability and access of the arts to all segments, to children, to the elderly, to encourage more people to participate in arts activities is an equal focus.
That must be very difficult.
Well, it is. It's a big responsibility to try to oversee, but you try to build it into your policies and in programs and encourage through the grant process, encourage organizations to develop more programs of access and availability to underserved portions so that they're, and in their interest, that helps them build audiences, of course, so it's not all philanthropic.
If excellence is a primary criterion, how does the board attempt to go about determining that without alienating the majority of the arts community?
Well, that is one of the most difficult things, of course, to define about the arts, because often people think interpretations of the arts are subjective or reactions. I don't think that's entirely true. I think there are objective ways of measuring the arts.
For instance?
Some objective ways. There are aesthetic principles that cover many different kinds of art forms. So I think the introduction of the panel system has helped with this. We try to find people who will serve in the review processes, who have strong credentials in various fields of the arts. And we try to get a cross-section of different disciplines so that there are people who are particularly knowledgeable about music or architecture or the visual arts serving together on a panel. And it's surprising to me the consensus that is reached by people who do have a lot of training and experience. That also commands respect from the people submitting grants, whether they're individual artists or organizations. We are now trying to go beyond the bounds of the state of Minnesota and bring in people from outside our boundaries who have no knowledge or very little knowledge of persons or programs in our state in an effort to make the process even more objective. It's very difficult to find people within Minnesota who don't have ties of some sort with organizations or particular programs.
How is that practice being received by the arts community?
Very well. Particularly the individual artists have responded in their application rounds, have responded very well to that. Generally, the names of outside people are names of individuals who are recognized in their fields, and individual artists seem to feel that it removes any possibility of conflict of interest. And I guess
is
that's
that
important.
I
don't know that it's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm. What have you been doing or trying to undertake as chairperson of the Minnesota State Arts Board?
Good question. Well, something that I had hoped to get launched in a more substantial way was a stronger image of what the Arts Board does circulated about the state. And my vision of this would have been through, largely through publications, for which we have little or no budget, and recently no staff person to do it. So I have been quite frustrated in my effort to try to get a better program of advocacy through publication and through public dialogue. I'd like to see the Arts Board sponsor some public discussions of policies that are related to general arts support or arts criticism or the public's part in the programs that we support. And that's still coming up in the future. We have a new director. The last couple of years, I've spent a lot of time on search committees and finding staff people, which is our primary responsibility. But we have a new director in place now who's just getting a very good start in the arts community and with his staff. And I think Sam will bring some of these things into focus and into a program rather quickly.
How strong a working relationship is there between the board and the staff?
Well, I think it's a good working relationship. We have such a turnover on the board, too. You know, 3 to 4 new people come on every year, and it seems to me we're forever conducting orientation sessions. We're going to have a board retreat this spring for the first time since I've ever been on the board, in which we'll have an opportunity to spend 2 days together, board and staff people only, out at Spring Hill Center, and we're bringing in a consultant on board-staff relationships to help us define a little better what those are. And I think it will build some very strong bonds of both of understanding, of people knowing each other, both among board members and with staff members. So I'm looking forward to that a great deal.
What changes have you observed the Minnesota State Arts Board going through since your tenure as chairperson?
Well, the budget of the board was severely reduced during the recent budget crises in the state fiscal problem, and to recover from those whacking blows has been taken a great effort. We're in the middle of a budget process right now. The governor's recommendation for the next biennium is a 40% increase over the last biennial allocation. So I think that recommendation stood at $5.8 million, which provides general operating support to major organizations and institutions throughout the state, provides a program for the regional arts councils, provides artists' assistance both through a repaired and redeemed program for individual artists of many different descriptions, also arts and education. And those are the primary program focuses.
But with that 40% increase, that still would not bring your budget up to what it was?
It would bring it back to, yes, it would bring it back to
at the time
about
of the
1980
crisis
levels, considering inflation. It's actually more money than has ever been allocated. But if you consider an inflation factor as far as its effect, and the state figures that into its allocation, it should return us approximately, I think, to 1980 level of program ability.
Has the state legislature been supportive of the Minnesota State Arts Board and its missions?
I think so. I think there's strong recognition now about the economic impact of the arts. Studies have been done in various communities, including Moorhead and Fargo. Duluth has an economic impact study. I think Rochester has. And various studies have been made of programs in the metropolitan areas. So that's a strong argument with legislators. They understand the dollars and cents. Also, the partnerships that exist between the state program and the federal government. You know, we function with a sizable block grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, and that money goes into both programs and administration. Also, Minnesota's unique in having developed a number of public-private partnerships. The main one was with the McKnight Foundation. This will be the fifth year of the McKnight program, in which about $600,000 annually is made available for arts organizational support. And that's been a very exciting program. The money is supplied through the McKnight Foundation, but administered through the General Operating Support Review Program.
How were these partnerships initiated and developed? As to why would they come to the Minnesota State Arts Board?
Well, the McKnight Foundation did, as a matter of fact, come to the Arts Board, recognizing that there was a good review process. They wanted to give some money to the arts, and as a foundation, they do not employ a staff that would have the administrative ability to review all of that. So they were looking for an organization that did have something in place and that they could flow money through in a reliable way. So it was a nice sign of recognition on their part for a method of administering a program. They have some other ways of funding the arts, too. They are giving money directly into endowment funds for the four largest organizations, the Minnesota Orchestra and the Guthrie Theater. And that's outside the Arts Board purview. But this has been a major program appreciated greatly by the benefiting organizations. And we're working to preserve it. The future directions of the McKnight Foundation are kind of unknown at this point, and so the guidelines may change dramatically after this next review round. The other partnerships have been of much smaller monetary significance, but they've been important. I think the next important one was with the Dayton Hudson Foundation when we lost the individual artist program because of legislative cuts. The legislature just cut that program. It was no decision of the arts boards. Dayton Hudson came up with $50,000 to challenge the legislature to provide another $50,000 in order to keep that program alive. And since then, the legislature has come back and reinstated the program and funded it fully. So that initial participation from the Dayton Hudson Foundation in the form of a challenge grant was very important to our programming ability.
It appears that the actions of the legislature is crucial to
absolutely.
The Arts Board and its activities. Is any attempt made to educate, inform, or to influence the members of the legislature?
Oh, yes. We have a very, very active advocacy organization in Minnesota called Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, which exists as the political voice of the arts in the state of Minnesota. It's one of the most highly organized in the United States, with strong support and quite a long history. And the reason it developed was because by law, members of state boards are not allowed to lobby. There are strict laws against actual lobbying. The major organizations in the Twin Cities were the kind of founders of MCA and have had a strong influence on its political activity. The Arts Board and MCA should always complement each other. They haven't always. They have worked in a political process that sometimes we don't understand for different ends. And I think we've overcome some of our differences and have much better lines of communication than we had a couple of years ago.
How did
and
you go about?
Things are going a lot better.
How did you go about attempting to create some of these better lines of communication?
Well, when Jim Olson was the executive director, he was, I think, particularly effective in being open, demanding that same kind of openness from the people being dealt with there. And slowly he went about trying to rebuild a feeling of trust, which had been very badly damaged over some rather quick legislative action taken during a crisis time that few of us who weren't on the scene could understand. So we've had a little more time to work with it. In addition, there's been a national network of state advocacy programs developed since then. Better guidelines for people all on participating from all angles here, so that the situation is far more comprehensible and compatible than it was, I think, in its early days.
What would you say have been your responsibilities as chairperson?
Well, I feel, I preside at the scheduled meetings. I keep in very close touch with the executive director, trying to anticipate problems that might arise or policies that need to be developed. Try to keep in fairly direct contact with other members of the board, though we're so widespread that that's sometimes hard, and I'm geographically removed from the center of action. The office is located in St. Paul. Our board consists of 11 members, 8 of them appointed from the 8 congressional districts of Minnesota and 3 at large. So people are scattered, and we often don't see each other for 2 months at a time, and then only for a 2-hour scheduled meeting. That's why I'm looking forward to the retreat. I think people will finally have a chance to sit down and get to know each other a little better. It's something we haven't had much opportunity to do. I represent the board at some national meetings. We belong to a National Assembly of State Arts Agencies, and I'm the chairperson, and the executive director are the members of that body. So I have attended those national meetings for the last 3 or 4 years. They've been very interesting, held in Denver and Cleveland and New Orleans, and last year in Hartford. In fact, Minnesota is going to be the host for this meeting in 1986, and I'm starting to shake a little over that already, because the planning process will be a major one. Also, our State Arts Board is a member of a regional affiliation, currently called the Affiliated State Arts Agencies of the Upper Midwest, better known to us as AWSEM. This organization exists to promote consolidated touring activities in primarily the performing arts, but there has been a small visual arts program in connection with that also. We have just voted to merge with another of the regions of the United States, the Great Lakes Association, called GLA. And so now we will be a 9-state region. The merger will take place officially on July 1st.
What will be some of the benefits of these mergers and associations with these other organizations?
Well, first of all, I think to centralize and simplify the administrative focus is the primary benefit, because those organizations are largely funded by programs coming through the National Endowment for the Arts, such as the Dance Initiative Program or the InterArts Program. And one large regional office, I think, can deal with those applications and programs in a better way than two. And also the participating organizations in the tour, touring programs, the performing organizations themselves look forward to a much wider field, a marketing field. There are organizations in Minnesota which would be happy to develop some touring ability, say in Ohio, would take them out into a much broader area, developing their program and audiences.
What has been the advantage to the Moorhead community and region as a result of, shall we say, your participation at the Arts Board level?
I'm not sure I can point to any great advantage. Something that I personally was interested in seeing developed was a better definition of general operating support. When I first went on the board, there was just one program of general operating support for major organizations, and I think approximately 13 organizations. You would know because you were the Tim was the chairman of the panel review process for several years at the time of this changeover. At the same time, smaller organizations had to try to obtain grant money through a special projects kind of program in which they had to invent some special program for which the funding would be dedicated, like a particular production or some kind of extra added dimension to their ordinary program. And at the same time, those organizations needed general operating support too. So we developed a second tier for general operating support for smaller organizations and divided the list in two. And it has grown so astronomically, it's very hard to keep up with it. But level two organizations were organizations that had budgets of $700,000 or more. And I think and maybe this is still true, that between 10 and 12 organizations in the state of Minnesota function at that level. Then level two was for organizations with budgets from $100,000 to $700,000. And an organization had to show some stability, an audited budget for 2 years, and have been in production or an standing organization for a certain length of time. But that list has grown. That's the list that has grown so dramatically, so that now we really have far more demand than we can answer. So a third, do you know this? A third splinter has been developed this year called Tier 2 community organizations, and organizations that have definitely a kind of community mission statement are applying under this. I saw a list of stated organizations, and two I can mention would be the Fargo-Moorhead Community Theater and the Rochester Civic Theater, who have traditionally had kind of a running competition. But the decision is made by the applying organization, and I think it depends on what the mission of the organization is rather than what the budget is or just how it's staffed and developed. So that's a different experiment this year. So these organizations will be reviewed by yet a third panel.
What do you think it is about the people from the Moorhead community that has resulted in the fact that so many of them have been involved at the state level in terms of leadership and participation?
Well, I think these boards are developed with geographic representation in mind. This is one of the major metropolitan areas outside of the Twin Cities. Rochester being another, St. Cloud being another, Duluth. So we have been we've been targeted, I think, as having an important geographic place to represent, and we've had, this is a very strong arts community. There's so much going on here. There are many talented and knowledgeable, well-trained people up here.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, of course, I think the presence of three institutions of higher learning has a very important role in bringing those kinds of programs into our community. But we've had a notable symphony for 50 years. The community theater has been functioning for 37 or 38 years. There has, for at least that long, there's been a very supportive community of people willing to, interested in organizing, interested in attending, interested in participating. I think this is a strong recommendation for our quality of life in our area, that we have so much arts organization and activity going on here of such good quality.
What would you say are the problems confronting you right now as chairperson of the Minnesota State Arts Board?
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, to try to train and bring along strong board members who can find ways of affecting public arts policy in good ways. It takes, board materials take a long time to sort through, and the weight of it all gets overwhelming sometimes, but we have some very good people who can provide different perspectives. Somebody fairly new on our board who has interesting ideas is Sia Armajani, who is a sculptor who's been very prominent nationally with Art in Public Places programs. And Sia is very busy, but we hope to tap into his knowledge and expertise. He also has very strong opinions about the arts, so we need a forum. We need a chance to talk all these things over. We have other board members who would like more opportunity, I think, to question and to develop positions and statements. So that's one thing, to draw the most that's there out of people currently serving on the board and really make maximum use of their knowledge and interest and potential. And also to support staff development. Sam Grabarski is our new director. He has full credentials, both in his preparation, his academic background, which is in music. Sam has a degree from Juilliard in performing, and a music education degree from the University of Illinois, and has worked as a practicing musician and an arts administrator for 10 years. He's a very skillful kind of person. He needs time to build a staff, his own staff, and get his own, you know, ideas launched. He needs time to get better acquainted with Minnesota organizations and institutions, although he had a lot of previous knowledge. He's currently the president of the affiliation. Also, he's been an NEA panel member and site visitor, visiting and evaluating programs in the Twin Cities over a period of years. So not only does he know our programs, but the participating organizations know Sam, too. But it simply takes time to put it all together. It's frustrating that the program is sometimes subject to political whims and, you know,
how so?
This way. Well, because it's entirely sponsored by the legislature, and we have to keep them informed and persuaded of the values. And the the composition of committees and people is always changing. So it's always a changing scene that has to be dealt with.
What are some of the successes that you've had the pleasure of witnessing with the State Arts Board?
Well, it's been interesting to observe the growth of some programs. There's been a tremendous amount of development statewide. And even though the regional program is out from under the actual jurisdiction of the Arts Board, it's been wonderful to observe how well those programs scattered in 11 different areas of the state have managed to hang in there and grow and support the growth of activities in areas that are not quite as densely populated as this. So that's been rewarding. It's been wonderful to watch the reinstatement of the Individual Artist Program. Last Friday, we voted on panel recommendations in the amount of, I think, $125,000. This is compared to no dollars at all 2 years ago. So that 10 artists' fellowships at the level of $10,000 were approved. To be able to give $10,000, you know, to somebody to work on a very specific career project is, I think, a great privilege, and that was satisfying to get that program back on track.
How has your involvement with the Minnesota State Arts Board affected your personal life?
Well, it's a busy schedule. I spend a lot of time going to meetings and preparing for them. Last week, I spent 3 days in Minneapolis, which was a little heavy, but and it's erratic. It isn't always that much. I think I've learned so much. I've met so many interesting people, both artists and organization people and other state arts people, that the rewards there have been, on a personal level, very, very gratifying and very stimulating, you might say. They're generally very exciting people to know, get acquainted with. But it certainly does fracture any kind of schedule of doing a lot at home, because I've traveled around a lot, but it has been a privilege and a pleasure to do that.
Your involvement with the Arts Board seems to be more on an organizational, managerial, public advocate role, as opposed to a performer, which is something that you used to be involved with. How do you reconcile the two?
Well, of course, you're describing or delineating programs that deal with performers at all levels. So maybe the previous experience probably gives one an appreciation of what it's all about, audiences and live presentations of the arts. So sometimes the organizational aspect gets weighty, and the bureaucratic end of it. There are a lot of confining restrictions on what can be done and what, you know, needs to be done. The programs of the Arts Board are pretty well delineated. It's largely a grants-making agency with three or four different kinds of grants programs. We have never had the budgetary freedom to have any discretionary money in the years I belong for the board itself to invent a project, say. We've always been in a reactive state, responding to the development of arts programs by the public at large, and never have we been in any kind of direct programming role. I'm not, you know, our mission doesn't describe that. I was disappointed in that when I went on the board. I'd hoped we could, you know, establish some kind of commission or do something that had a more direct relationship. But until or, you know, unless we actually get funding from the legislature to ever do that, our funding is channeled very specifically into program initiatives. We did request, I think, $66,000 in this year's or the next biennium for something we called special initiatives, which was going to be only $30,000 a year to put out requests for proposals to explore some new ideas. There are some areas of the arts that are not served at all, sort of new. Video artists, for example, don't seem to, are not dealt with very well. And there are disgruntled musical composers out there. I mean, there are lots of people who feel they are not served, artists in the field. And it would be nice to have a little extra funding to do some research and exploring or to sponsor dialogues, in my opinion. I think that's something we ought to be doing, trying to find the money.
What role do you think art should play in a person's life or in a community's life?
Well, I think, you know, I used to say, you know, after food and shelter, but I think it now coexists with food and shelter, that people invent art as they go along. You know, in primitive societies, we may know very little of food and shelter, but we still have the relics of art that was developed. I just think it's an absolutely necessary element of human existence to make some form of artistic expression or participation available to people. And one of the great areas of neglect in the world, shall we start on another subject? The arts and education, which have been declining at public elementary, secondary, university levels for the last 20 years in the state of Minnesota through lack of teachers, lack of program, lack of equipment, and the little bit we can do through Arts Board grants is you know, just a very infinitesimal part of a much larger need.
Should we say the arts are the dinosaurs of the 20th century?
Well, you could. I hope not. I hope not. I think there's more. People are organizing and protesting and trying to get it back on track. But until there's a wider recognition that the arts are something more essential to human existence than an extracurricular activity, which is where they've been placed largely in public education, until we get over that huge hurdle, you know, they're going to be off in some little corner, not widely understood. And it's, I think, the greatest need of modern society to bring them back into a central part of everybody's daily life.
And on that note, thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you, Tim.